This is Jesse Zurawell and Perspective on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Perspective. I am Jesse Zurawell, your host for the hour. And my guest today, I'm delighted to say, is Issa Amro. Issa is a peace activist who is based in the city of Hebron, which is in the occupied West Bank of Palestine. Issa is the co-founder of the grassroots activist group Youth Against Settlements. And for well over a decade, he has, as an activist, worked to advocate the use of nonviolent resistance and civil disobedience to combat the Zionist occupation of Palestine. In 2010, the UN declared him a Human Rights Defender of the Year in Palestine. And he's somebody I've looked forward to speaking with for quite some time now. He's also, as I'm sure we'll get into, been subject to persecution for his work by both the Zionist occupation entity as well as the Palestinian Authority, or Fatah as they're known. So without further ado, Issa, welcome to Perspective. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Thank you very much for inviting me, and thank you very much for raising the Palestinian cause.
Absolutely. So I just want to start with the organization you co-founded, Youth Against Settlements, and ask you if you can to describe it a little bit, why you decided to start this particular organization, why you decided to pursue nonviolent resistance and civil disobedience, and what Youth Against Settlements, what its mission, so to speak, is.
First of all, nonviolent resistance in the Palestinian resistance is not new. Palestinians, mm-hmm. Used nonviolent resistance in the 30s, and we had the longest strike ever for almost 6 months. And in the first Intifada in 1987, Palestinians used popular resistance and civil disobedience a lot. But as Palestinians, we didn't have much media coverage or social media to reach outside Palestine. I decided to use nonviolent resistance as a type of resistance, which I think it's the best methodology to end the Israeli occupation for many, many reasons. The first reason for me is that I want to engage the whole society in resistance, which is the nonviolent resistance, because nonviolent resistance, gives opportunity to everybody to participate and have a role. And, it generates international awareness, international solidarity. It neutralized the Israeli brutal power. And we as Palestinians are used to nonviolent resistance, and we think that it's a great method, and we can do it well, and we are doing it, and many Palestinians did it. One of the best examples lately are the Palestinians demonstrating, protesting against the apartheid wall in the Palestinian villages in Budros, Bil'in, Nabi Saleh, Hebron, South Mount mm-hmm. Hebron. Then the anti-metal detectors protest in Jerusalem, where they won the battle against the Israeli metal detectors, which Israel tried to impose on the people who are getting into the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And the right mm-hmm. of return marches in Gaza. Everybody knew about it in the world, how the Palestinians were doing an amazing protest, going to the fence, asking to end the siege of the Gaza, to end the Israeli occupation, and highlight the right of return of the Palestinian people and the self-determination. And in Hebron, we in Youth Against Settlements, we started working in 2007 to recruit Palestinian youth, to join nonviolent resistance from universities, from schools, and to do five main things: to do direct actions, rallies, sit-ins, to do tours and awareness and advocacy about the human rights violations, to document the human rights violations using the video cameras and using that for legal purposes, for media purposes, and for archiving, and to do legal work against the Israeli occupation, and for sure to do community work to strengthen the Palestinian steadfastness against the Israeli occupation, and do from time to time, you know, some kind of campaigning, sometimes of olive harvest, everything which is happening, because we as Palestinians, we are in defense. We are defending our rights, we are defending our land, we are defending our identity, and we are defending our future.
Yes, absolutely. And the work you've been doing is undoubtedly invaluable, and it has made a difference. And it's really a thorn in the side of the occupation entity, especially because the only way it knows how to deal with its criminality is through violence. And it really runs into trouble, especially with regard to its PR and how it presents itself to the world when it's responding to nonviolent resistance by Palestinians with violence, which is all it knows how to do. So I think in that sense, among many other senses, the work you've been doing is very effective. I'm wondering why you particularly work with Palestinian youth. Is there a specific reason why you recruit youth, so to speak, to work in this organization and to raise awareness of what's going on?
Yes, for sure. The Palestinian population are young. And, you know, the majority of the Palestinians are, their age is less than, let me say, 29 years old. And, you know, we wanted to start working with youth because the youth have a huge energy, and the youth, they are really dedicated, and the youth are the future. And we want to teach them from and train them from early age to stay nonviolent and to really have a method and a tool to end the Israeli occupation. We give them only the tool. They have the ambitions, they have the energy, they have the motivation, because, you know, it's a duty for us. We don't have any other option. You know, it's either to accept to be a second class citizen and live under apartheid and segregation and racism and be familiar and to coexist with the Israeli occupation, or to resist the occupation. So many Palestinians, you know, decided to resist the Israeli occupation. Unfortunately, the main obstacle for my work is the Israeli violence and the Israeli brutality. And we all saw the killing of Shireen Abu Akleh, the Palestinian journalist who was assassinated, and Israel then denied her killing. And yesterday, the CNN published a huge, amazing investigation report about her killing, and they accused of the Israeli occupation directly of her, it's targeting her and killing her. And then we saw how the Israeli occupation targeted her funeral and her peaceful funeral with a huge brutality. That amount of violence toward the Palestinians, killing journalists, killing human rights defenders, arresting them, beating children, arresting women. That brutality is the main obstacle of our work to convince the Palestinian youth to use nonviolence resistance as the only tool to end the Israeli occupation and apartheid in the occupied territories.
And what's worse about what happened at Shireen's funeral is that one of the pallbearers was jailed afterward. One of the men who was helping to carry her casket and who was being hit repeatedly by a Zionist police officer. He was detained by the authorities a day or so after her funeral. And the Zionist occupation entity said it had nothing to do with the funeral and his participation in it. But of course, it had everything to do with that. So I'm not sure what his status is now. Perhaps you know, but as you said, you know, that speaks to not just the level of violence that the Zionist occupation entity is willing to go to, but the fact that all they really know is violence. That's the only way they know how to respond. They've never been interested in peaceful negotiation. Even if you go back to the negotiation of the Oslo Accords, everybody was hailing Yitzhak Rabin as this this man of peace. But while he was negotiating the accords, he was busy building more illegal colonies in the occupied West Bank. So, you know, violence is all that the Zionist occupation entity knows. So to add to that, I'd like to just reemphasize a point you made, which is very important for people to remember, which is that nonviolent resistance and civil disobedience have long been a part of the Palestinian resistance to their occupation. And that's often obfuscated here in the West and done so on purpose for obvious reasons. But we need to remember that. And I think, you know, the Great March of Return, which you brought up, is a perfect example of that. And we saw there too how the Zionist occupation entity responded to those protesters by shooting them to death, by gassing them. I mean, all sorts of criminal acts for which they've never been held responsible. So I just wanted to reemphasize that. What are some of the tactics that Youth Against Settlements uses in its resistance?
We, you know, before we go to the tactics, I want all the listeners to really go and read the new apartheid report of Amnesty, which describes mm-hmm. Israel as an apartheid state, and the Human Rights Watch. I want all the listeners to enrich their knowledge about Israeli occupation and apartheid. Now it's apartheid from the river to the sea. And we should really highlight that Israel is an apartheid state and Palestinians are oppressed and live under a system of apartheid. And in the other
let me ask you, since you brought up those reports, Amnesty International came out with one, Human Rights Watch came out with one. B'Tselem has, of course, been putting out reports of this nature for quite some time. As a Palestinian who lives under occupation, who's lived under occupation his whole life, what was your response when those recent reports, particularly the Amnesty one, came out? Because they were celebrated by a lot of activists here in the West who aren't necessarily Palestinian. But, you know, as somebody who lives under the occupation, what has been your response to those reports? Do you feel like they are a positive development with regard to the resistance?
Yes, for sure. It's part of our successful, of our nonviolence resistance. It's one of the victories, and it's a victory of the solidarity groups who are working outside Palestine, because, you know, those kind of reports would not be public and made without the support of all the people who are listening to me now and think that the Palestinian cause is really impossible. No, we are winning, and we are really now putting high pressure on the apartheid regime in Palestine to end. So it's the beginning to highlight it, and to in the moment that Amnesty, Human Rights Watch, the biggest human rights organizations in the world, describe Israel as an apartheid state, it's a big achievement. And it describes the situation on the ground. Since long time, we were talking and describing that what is happening to the Palestinians is an apartheid. One of the best examples, as a Palestinian living in Hebron, I am under the Israeli military law, which means that I'm not allowed to do any kind of general assembly. I have no rights, no basic human rights. On the mm-hmm. other hand, the Israeli settlers, who are civilians, who live very close to me in the same area, they are under the Israeli civilian law. They have a welfare life on the expense of our basic human rights. So two mm-hmm. sets of law in the same area for different people. I want anybody to convince me it's not apartheid. It's apartheid. Right. It's the main definition of apartheid. It's the UN definition. It's the, the legal international definition of apartheid. So it's apartheid. And we want that to describe the reality on the ground, that it's an apartheid. About what our tactics are, we use, we try, all the time to study the Israeli military plans. We study the Israeli settlers' plans and we try to, counter them. One of our main strategy is to occupy spaces, Palestinian closed houses, and we try to renew and restore those houses and give it back to the Palestinian families. We managed to win many, many Palestinian houses in Hebron. One of them, we made it as a kindergarten. Another one, we made it as a women's center. And another one, we were trying to make it a cinema, the only cinema in Hebron district for around 800,000 Palestinians. But until now, mm-hmm. we didn't manage. So because the occupation, prevented us. So we tried to occupy spaces. We try to support Palestinian steadfastness by organizing volunteering days to do maintenance to the houses, to do, painting, electricity work, plumbing, because Palestinians are living in the targeted area. They don't have any kind of craftsperson to get in to give them any kind of maintenance. We do it. We support them with that. We connect them to media. We connect them to human rights organization. So we really try to have our voice outside Palestine and the family voices. We do protests as kind of nonviolence actions. We march in the streets. We accompany the kids to school. We escort the kids to school. We escort the families. We observe the settler websites to know when they attack. We have night shifts to protect Palestinian properties, Palestinian houses, and Palestinian people.
Excellent. I think it's amazing. Again, I can't say it enough. I think it's amazing work that you're doing. And I really, the sort of civil society, I hesitate to use that term because it gets a lot of negative connotation and for good reasons, but the civil society work you're doing that goes beyond just protesting, that goes toward, as you said, protecting spaces from theft by colonists, helping to rebuild spaces, to make them into public spaces that can be used by all of the Palestinians in the community. I think that's such a vital aspect of your work as well. You can really see, I think, the fruits of your labor, if you will, through that. And, that's just, it's fantastic to hear that. And, it's inspiring as well. We need to throw it to a quick break for a few minutes. But I have much more I'd like to ask you when we come back. So more with Issa Amro after this.
You should hear what Misty Winston is talking about.
I want to actually talk a little bit about the class divide with you, because I think that, you just mentioned the class war, and we are in, I don't think people recognize it, we are in a class war and have been for some time. The middle class, the working class, we perhaps have been unaware of the fact that we're in a class war, but that's been going on for a long time. So let's talk a little bit about that and the class divide. Well, how do you see things right now? Because I feel like right now there's a lot of distractions being thrown our way to kind of prevent us from noticing the man behind the curtain.
Right. I think people really need to pay attention to what's going on economically in this country. And I don't just mean in reference to inflation. For example, I talked about this the other night. Bill Gates is actually buying farmland in the United States, a lot of farmland. And there was a woman that came on my show about 2 weeks ago, and she was telling me that Bill Gates is stealing water from her town.
Misty Winston on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Suck it up.
It's not a big deal.
Snap out.
Just get over it.
We've all heard it. But if you're experiencing extreme stress, it's not just in your head. It can affect your entire body because toxic stress can hurt us physically without us even knowing it. If you've lost a job, worry about your next meal, or have trouble making it through the day, if you're feeling the effects of stress, we can help. Text STRESS to 211-211 to find a solution.
St. Joseph's Indian School is much more than a school for Native American children.
It's like a family. Classes are fun here. I am learning about my culture.
Since 1927, St. Joseph's Indian School has provided children the education, health care, and support they need to succeed. To help give our kids brighter futures, learn more at stjo.org today.
where progress is influenced by revolution and evolution. This is today's News Talk Radio.
TNT.
TNT.
Welcome back to Perspective. I am Jesse Zerwell, and I've been speaking with Issa Amro. Issa is a human rights activist who is based in the occupied West Bank city of Hebron. He is the co-founder of the activist group Youth Against Settlements, which advocates for nonviolent resistance and civil disobedience to the Zionist occupation of Palestine. Issa, I want to ask you about the persecution you've faced for your work, because you've been targeted many times for many, many years for the nonviolent resistance that you've carried out, that you and Youth Against Settlements have carried out. You've been taken to court by the Zionist occupation entity. You've faced jail time, and you've also been persecuted by the Palestinian Authority. In one case, you were arrested by the PA or Fatah because you supposedly violated the electronics crimes law, which can see those who are guilty of, quote, disturbing social harmony, unquote, on social media face up to 15 years of hard labor. Can you talk a bit about the persecution you faced, and if you don't mind, that other Palestinians who do similar work to yours face, and also maybe if you can, I know it's kind of a broad question, but you know, what if you can detail a little bit the treatment that Palestinians who in particular go into the Zionist occupation entity's quote unquote justice system, what kind of treatment they face, because it's not humane treatment, to say the least.
You know, the Israeli military is really very, very violent, and they don't like nonviolence resistance. So they target nonviolence activists by arrest, detention, smear campaigns to, you know, make them give up their resistance. So I was attacked many times by Israeli soldiers physically. I was attacked physically, verbally by Israeli settlers many times with full impunity. I was arrested, detained, indicted, convicted in the Israeli military court for my nonviolence and civil disobedience. I'm still in court. I appealed being convicted on 6 military charges in the Israeli military court. The subcontractor of the Israeli occupation is the Palestinian Authority. They torture Palestinians and they make their life horrible not to resist the Israeli occupation. I'm one of the Palestinians who was arrested, ill-treated, smeared by the Palestinian Authority regime for resisting the Israeli occupation and for, you know, talking loud against corrupt leaders and asking for democracy and equality and human rights in my own country and in my own by my own people. In the Israeli military, you know, they have the administrative detention. Now we have around 500 Palestinian detainees. They are in administrative detention, and they are boycotting the Israeli military court because of this administrative detention. And they are now trying to increase their pressure on the Israeli military to stop targeting them and put them in administrative detention. You know, unfortunately, Palestinian Authority security forces and the Israeli military, they cooperate to keep the status quo and to give time to the settlements to expand. So both of them, they work hard to kill any kind of spirit of resistance. And they want the Palestinians to give up and coexist with the Israeli occupation.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I'm looking at one of the indictments that you received. This was a few years back. I don't see a date on it, but I believe it was from around 2016-2017. Actually, no, this one is from 2010. And what the indictment in part reads is that
you're being accused of assaulting the civilian coordinator of, in this case, Kiryat Arba, which I believe is an illegal Jewish-only colony in the West Bank. But these are the types of charges you face for your nonviolent resistance, and this is how the occupation entity distorts the work that you do. They call it assault, and if I'm not mistaken, they've even closed some of the cases they've had against you and then reopened them. Is that correct?
It's not a military fair court or military fair system, or it's for justice or for equality. It's a military system. And the sole purpose of the military court and this kind of laws is to kill the spirit of Palestinian resistance. In 2010, I was attacked by this security man with gun, big gun, M16 rifle. I was attacked for filming Settlers' Riot. And then he claimed that I attacked him or assaulted him. And the truth that I was attacked, I was assaulted. My camera was attacked by him. And then I was arrested, ill-treated, and then indicted for this. And I was convicted for this as well in the military court. I'm appealing now. But that is the reality in the ground, that you are not allowed, according to the Israeli military court or the military system, to any kind of general assembly. Peaceful general assembly is illegal in the Israeli military system.
Mm-hmm. And what is their justification for that? Not that they actually have a justification, but what do they say is the reason for that, besides just wanting to obviously kill the spirit of Palestinian resistance? Legally, what do they put forth as their reason for you and other activists not being able to gather and carry out acts of civil disobedience?
There is no excuse. It's against the international law. I'm allowed, according to the international law, to practice my general assembly and resist peacefully the Israeli occupation. It's my right. It's the right of everybody on earth to oppress, to really march, do nonviolence actions, to express their opinion, to really, try to stop any kind of dictatorship. So Palestinians don't have that right because of the Israeli military law, and we pay very high price. And Israel is not at all, accountable for this kind of violation of the international law, not to let us even resist the Israeli occupation peacefully.
Yes. And I assume that they put forth the reason for their persecutions as that gatherings of Palestinians could possibly be acts of terror, or they could be conspiring to commit acts of violence. We hear this all the time from the Zionist entity. I wanted to ask you, in addition to that, I wanted to talk more about where you live in Hebron, which has long been a hotspot, for lack of a better term, of not just occupation, but resistance to occupation. There's quite a history there, going back to the massacre at the Ibrahimi Mosque. And just recently, with regard to the Ibrahimi Mosque, I'm reading now here from Middle East Monitor that, quote, Israeli occupation authorities began taking down parts of the stairs of the Ibrahimi Mosque in occupied Hebron. And their reason for doing this is to supposedly put in an elevator in the area, so that Jewish colonists can access the site, because they believe elderly colonists can access the site because they believe that the site is the where Joseph's tomb is. And then as well, Hebron is based in what's known as Area C, which These areas were sort of decided under the Oslo agreements in the early 90s. So just to give people context, Area A in the occupied West Bank is under full Palestinian civil and security control. That is, of course, the control of the Palestinian Authority. Area B is full Palestinian civil control and joint Israeli-Palestinian security control. And then Area C, where Hebron is, where Bethlehem is, where Jericho is, where Ramallah is, Jenin, which has seen lots of attacks lately. That, in fact, is where Shireen Abu Akleh was murdered in the north of the West Bank. This is in Area C as well. And Area C is under full Israeli control with regard to security, planning, and construction. And if you look at a map of how these areas are situated in the occupied West Bank, Area C is critical because it really is the Bantustan. It really creates the Bantustans that we hear people refer to when they talk about the apartheid of Palestinians. It really it breaks up the West Bank so that it's physically impossible for there to be a contiguous Palestinian state in the West Bank geographically. And then, of course, we have the full control of the Zionist occupation entity, and they are building illegal colonies on this land as we speak. But, you know, as somebody who lives in Hebron, who's lived there for, I believe, your whole life, if I'm not mistaken, can you talk about the city in particular, its history, and why it's such a contentious spot? Again, another cliche word to use, but why it's such a contentious spot with regard to the occupation and resistance to the occupation, and why it's so coveted by the Zionist colonists. Okay, it looks like Issa's dropped out. So we're going to throw it to a break real quick, and hopefully we can get him back. So stay tight, and we shall return after this.
President Joe Biden praises high gas prices as part of an incredible transition away from fossil fuels.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
When it comes to the gas prices, we're going through an incredible transition that is taking place that, God willing, when it's over, will be stronger and the world will be stronger and less reliant on fossil fuels when this is over.
Yes, you heard that right. High gas prices, skyrocketing energy prices, are just a small price we all have to pay to get to that green utopia on the other side of the rainbow. Biden is now saying the quiet part out loud. Skyrocketing energy costs are the intended consequences of Biden's green energy policies, and for that matter, green energy policies all over the world. So the next time you have to fill up your car at the pump and feel a lot of pain, or pay your home energy bills with skyrocketing costs, just bring a smile. You are helping transition to a green utopia. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
The strength of our country hasn't just been won on the battlefield. It's won every day in our communities when we come together in our toughest times. For over 100 years, the American Legion has been strengthening communities across our nation by providing life-saving help and support to our veterans and neighbors during times like we're facing today. We are the American Legion, Veterans Strengthening America. To learn how you can help, visit legion.org.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit RAIN.org, that's RAINN.org.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Today, I have given formal notice to Russia in accordance with the treaty that the United States of America is withdrawing from this almost 30-year-old treaty. That was President George W. Bush's announcement in December 2001 that the United States would withdraw from the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty, which commenced in 1972. TNT Radio reviews this news again, more than two decades later, as a poignant reminder as to why the situation in Ukraine is so dire today. The mainstream media has failed to explain why the US withdrawal from the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty has led to increased tensions between the world's nuclear superpowers and the current crisis in Ukraine. Russian President Vladimir Putin has repeatedly condemned the United States for withdrawing from the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty.
Today, I have given formal notice to Russia, in accordance with the treaty, that the United States of America is withdrawing from this almost 30-year-old treaty.
Russia's concern of U.S. nuclear weapons encroaching on its borders is legitimate. How would the United States react were the tables turned and Russia had a military alliance with Mexico?
Where progress is influenced by revolution and evolution. This is today's News Talk Radio.
TNT.
TNT.
Welcome back to Perspective. I am Jesse Zerwell, your host for the rest of the hour. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to reconnect with Issa just yet. Hopefully, we can get him back on the line before the end of the hour. But as I was putting it to him before we lost our connection, I was talking about how the occupied West Bank of Palestine has been balkanized, so to speak, over many, many years since Oslo was negotiated in the early 90s, in 93 and 94, at which time, as I mentioned earlier in the discussion, Yitzhak Rabin, who was the prime minister of Israel at the time, was being feted around the world, particularly in the West, as a man of peace who was willing to sit down with Arafat and the PLO and come to the table, so to speak. But at the same time, which of course was not covered in Western corporate media, the illegal Jewish-only colonies in the West Bank were being expanded in their thousands. And this is something that we're seeing occur once again. A few weeks back, I reported that Israel has plans to expand its illegal Jewish-only colonies in the West Bank by the thousands in about a dozen different colonies. And there's been no response from the U.S., which is Israel's historical partner in crime, quite literally. Joe Biden, of course, came in and said that he was going to take a more peaceful approach to what's often referred to very blandly in Western corporate media as the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, as if there isn't an illegal occupation of 70-plus years that's been going on, where there's a clear imbalance between settler colonial occupation force and occupied indigenous peoples. There really hasn't been a peep from the Biden administration with regard to anything. There's been no reversal of Trump's unilateral decision to move the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. There's been no reversal of the recognition, the U.S.'s recognition of Israel as the Jewish state, which flies in the face of the democracy that it claims to be. How a state, quote unquote, and I put it in quotes because Israel is not a genuine state. Ask an Israeli official where Israel's eastern border is, and they cannot tell you because it doesn't have one. A state that doesn't have a territory, that doesn't have defined borders, cannot legally be called a state. And then we add to that the history of settler colonial occupation, ethnic cleansing, outright genocide
that Zionist occupation entity has perpetrated against indigenous Palestinians. This is not a state. This is a criminal settler colonial enterprise. So we shouldn't expect really anything to come from the Biden administration. And I think that anybody who's been paying attention to the Palestinian struggle for self-determination understood that even before the Biden administration came in to office. But getting back to this balkanization of the West Bank, I really encourage people to look up a map of what this balkanization looks like. I think one of the best resources for this is the UN of all places, and particularly the Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. You get a very stark picture of what Palestinians living under occupation in the West Bank are facing. So as I mentioned in my conversation with Issa, he lives in Hebron, which is in the southern portion of the West Bank. This is part of Area C. There are also many other major cities that are part of Area C. There's Bethlehem as we go north, and then northeast of there, we have Jericho. Slightly northwest of Jericho, we have Ramallah. North of that, we have Jenin, almost all the way at the top of the occupied West Bank. We have Nablus as well, which is sort of in the north central part of the occupied West Bank. And all of these cities are in this Area C, and they are surrounded by what are known as nature reserves that the Israeli government has decided are, you know, open land that belongs to Israel to be developed as they see fit. And I'm just realizing here as I look at this UN map that either the map might be incorrect or I may be reading it incorrectly. Certainly a lot of the cities I mentioned do fall within this Area C. Jericho, if I'm not mistaken, may be in Area A or B. See, this is one of the problems too, that when even somebody like myself who studied this for quite some time, it can be difficult to parse out just exactly how Israel has fractured this territory. But suffice it to say that the fracturing that's been done makes freedom of movement for occupied Palestinians near impossible. They have to deal with checkpoints. They have to deal with road closures. Meanwhile, colonists who occupy this land illegally under international law have roads for them and only them, and can pretty much travel as the crow flies. So that means if their trip to a particular location is going to take 10 minutes, it'll take 10 minutes for the colonists. If it should be 10 minutes as the crow flies for Palestinians, it may be 2 hours or more, because they can't travel as the crow flies necessarily. They have to navigate these checkpoints, these road closures. All of this is being manned by Israeli soldiers and police who are there illegally, which really adds another level to the persecution that Issa has faced, because they have no legal right to persecute him or any Palestinian for anything. given the fact that they are illegally occupying this Palestinian land. There is no legal mandate that they can possibly exercise. But nonetheless, this continues. This has been happening for 70 plus years since the foundation of the state, quote unquote, of Israel, which of course the British and the Americans are quite guilty of putting into existence. So all that said, it's important to note too that this doesn't just affect the travel of Palestinians if they want to get from point A to point B, but it also affects ambulances, for example. So if there is somebody who's in need of medical help, for the colonists, the ambulances will get there in 2 to 3 minutes, normal time, you could say. For Palestinians, the ambulances will be held up at checkpoints, will have to deal with road closures or detours, and it could sometimes take an hour or hours for medical personnel to reach a Palestinian who's in need of help. And often Palestinians die because of these on purpose delays that are that they're subject to thanks to the Zionist occupation. So, and then you add to this the theft of resources, particularly water in the West Bank. A lot of the illegal colonies are built in places where the colonists can plunder the aquifers that lie beneath the West Bank land. And this water goes not just for them to use in their houses for drinking water, etc. It also goes to fill the pools they get to swim in as they live the life of luxury on their hilltops. A lot of these colonies are built on hilltops that look down on Palestinian villages, and that's done strategically. The Zionist entity claims that it's done for protection, to protect against the ever-present boogeyman of Palestinian terrorism, but it's really done strategically as a way to both physically and psychologically dominate and intimidate indigenous Palestinians. So I invite people to also look at pictures of these colonies and see how they're constructed, how they're situated. You know, there's a lot of thought and intent that goes into the construction and placement of these colonies. And it adds another layer among many of just how wicked this Zionist enterprise is. Do, if you can, look up a map of the West Bank and how it's been balkanized, particularly since the Oslo Accords of the early 90s. And look up photos of the settlements in the West Bank, the major settlements in particular, Ma'ale Adumim, for example, or Ariel. These are huge, huge sprawling settlements. We're not just talking about outposts here. We're talking about almost cities unto themselves, fortified cities unto themselves when you consider the hilltop aspect. And speaking of Ma'ale Adumim, speaking of Ariel, these are settlements that are going to be added to quite soon. Thanks to settlement expansion that is that was recently announced by the Zionist occupation entity, Eilat Shaket. I'm forgetting her exact position, but she's famous for, or infamous for, during the 2014 war on Gaza, for claiming that Palestinian mothers give birth to baby snakes, and therefore the mothers, along with their baby snakes, must be exterminated. I believe this was something she said on social media. Of course, was not censored or punished for it, and is still in office, carrying out the occupation dutifully. Nothing is really changing on the ground for Palestinians. In fact, it's getting worse. And as I've talked about with Laith Maruf, as I've talked about with Issa Bloomi, the Zionist occupation entity is increasing its violence in parallel with the West. And I think we can safely consider Israel, or as you can see, I prefer to call them the Zionist occupation entity. We can call it a Western, we can call it part of the West, or a Western project, a garrison state of the West, state in quotes, obviously. And it's been increasing its violence severely against Palestinian resistance, against occupied Palestinians. And this comes at the same time as we're seeing Western Empire increase its violence, especially with regard to Ukraine. And of course, this violence is directed toward Russia by proxy. Biden just signed the $40 billion aid deal, aid in inverted commas, for Ukraine. That brings the total of what the U.S. has provided to Ukraine in terms of quote-unquote aid to $53 billion now. And as Scott Ritter has pointed out, an excellent geopolitical analyst who has a very lengthy military background, he sort of blew the whistle on the WMD hoax that led to the murders of millions of Iraqis. And this isn't even counting the war on Afghanistan that occurred concomitant to the war on Iraq, a war on Iraq, which is still very much ongoing. And I suppose you could make the argument that the war on Afghanistan is still ongoing when you talk about the seizure of Afghanistan's assets and its redistribution to survivors of victims of 9/11. But as Scott Ritter has pointed out, the $53 billion that's been thrown at Ukraine is more than Russia's annual military budget. So think about that. In 4 months, even less, the U.S. has provided Ukraine with more than Russia's annual military budget. And if that isn't, if that doesn't tell you what kind of paroxysm, what kind of spasm, what kind of death throes of violence Western Empire is in, I don't know what will. It's quite remarkable. And I bring this up because, again, we're seeing this run in parallel with Israel's increasing violence against Palestinians. One of the most recent manifestations, of course, was the targeted killing of the Al Jazeera journalist Shireen Abu Akleh. And then, of course, her funeral was targeted because the Zionist occupation entity cannot leave well enough alone. It only knows violence. And just to add to that, of course, something you'll never hear about in Western press, corporate media, which happens all the time. Yesterday, an Israeli occupation, the Israeli occupation forces killed a 16-year-old Palestinian boy near Nablus in the occupied West Bank. They shot him in the head during a confrontation between Palestinian youths and Zionist occupation forces. So again, another manifestation of this imperial violence increasing. So unfortunately, we were unable to reconnect with Issa. Hopefully all is well with him, and we'll try to get him back on in the near future. That's all for me for today. I'll be back tomorrow at the same time. Thank you everybody for tuning in, and be well out there.